She knew that Swahili word. Matatu had used it whenever her father had shot down an animal, and Matatu had slit its throat. Suddenly she was shaking with anger. She rounded on Sean. "You're going to murder her!" Her voice was shrill with outrage and horror. "Wait, Claudia, listen. We can't leave her here. If they catch her, it will be suicide." "You bastard!" she screamed at him. "You're as bad as any Renamo thug, as bad as China himself." "It's our lives, don't you understand? It's survival." "I can't believe what I'm hearing." "This is a hard, cruel land. If we are to survive, we have to live by those standards. We can't afford the folly of compassion." She wanted to attack him physically. She balled her fists in the effort of self-control, but her voice was still shrill. "Compassion and conscience are all that separate us from the animals." She drew a deep breath. "If you value what there is between us, you won't say anything more. You won't try to rationalize what you almost did to this child." "You prefer to be captured by General China?" he demanded. "This child, as you call her, won't hesitate to give him our exact whereabouts."
"Don't, Sean. I'm warning you. Everything you say is causing damage to our relationship that can never be repaired."
"All right, then." Sean reached out to take her hands and draw her to him. "What do you want us to do with her? I'll do whatever you say. You want us to turn her loose to report to the first Renamo patrol that comes along? I'll do it." Claudia was standing rigid in the circle of his arms, and though the strident edge was gone from her voice, it was cold and determined. "We'll take her with us." Sean dropped his arms.
"With us?"
"That's what I said. If we can't leave her, then that's the only solution." Sean stared at her, and she went on firmly. "You said you'd do whatever I say. You gave me a promise." He opened his mouth and then closed it and looked at the black girl. She had understood some of the argument, enough to know that her life was at stake and that Claudia was her champion, her savior. When Sean saw the expression on the child's face, suddenly he was filled with shame and self-disgust. It was an alien sensation. During the Bush War, the scouts had left no witnesses. This woman of his was turning him soft, he thought, and then smiled and shook his head. Or perhaps she was simply humanizing him. "All right." He was still smiling. "The girl comes with us, on condition that you forgive me." The kiss was brief, cool. Claudia's lips were tightly closed. Sean understood it would take time for her to recover from her outrage. She turned from Sean and lifted the black girl to her feet. Miriam clung to her, thankfully. "Fetch her loincloth," Sean ordered Matatu, "and put your knife away. The girl's coming with us." Matatu rolled his eyes in disapproval, but he went to find the girl's single item of clothing. While Miriam rewound the scrap of rag around her waist, Sergeant Alfonso leaned on his rifle and watched her with interest. It was obvious that he was not unhappy with the decision to spare the girl. Claudia did not approve of his appraisal of her protégé, and she opened her small personal pack and dug out her one spare shirt, a camouflage Renamo sweatshirt from General China's stores. The shirt hung half down Miriam's thighs and satisfied Claudia's sense of decorum. The black girl was delighted, her terror of a few minutes before forgotten as she preened in her new finery.
"Thank you, Donna. Thank you very much. You good lady."
"All right," Sean intervened. "The fashion show is over. Let's move out." And Alfonso took Miriam's arm. Only then the girl realized that she was being abducted, and she pulled away and broke into a passionate protest. "Oh, damn it," Sean exploded. "Now we really are in trouble."
"What is it?" Claudia demanded.
"She isn't alone. She's got others with her."
"I thought she'd lost her parents."
"That's right, but she's got a brother and sister hidden in the swamps. Two kids so young they can't fend for themselves."
"Damn it. Damn it," Sean repeated bitterly. "Now what the hell do we do?"
"We fetch the children and take them with us also," Claudia stated simply.
"Two brats? Are you crazy? We aren't running an orphanage."
"Do we have to go over this one more time?" Claudia turned her back on him in exasperation and took Miriam's hand. "It's all right. You can trust me. We'll look after all of you." The black girl quietened and stared at Claudia with a puppy's trust and adoration. "Where are the children? We'll fetch them."
"Come, Donna. I show you."
Miriam led her by the hand into the swamp. It was almost dark when they reached the tiny island where Miriam had hidden the children in the clump of papyrus. When she parted the thick green stems, two pairs of huge dark eyes stared out at them like owlets from the nest.
"A boy," Claudia lifted him out.
He was 5 or 6 years of age, skinny and shivering with fright.
"And a girl."
She was younger, not more than 4 years old, and Claudia exclaimed as she touched her,
"She's burning up! This child is very sick."
She was too weak to stand, and she lay curled like a dying kitten, trembling and mewling softly. "Malaria," said Sean, and squatted beside the child. "She's riddled with it." "We've got chloroquine in the medical pack." Claudia reached for it briskly.
"This is madness," Sean growled. "We can't lumber ourselves with this bunch. It's a nightmare."
"Do shut up," Claudia snapped. "How many chloroquine do I give her? The instructions say for children under 6 years, consult a physician." "Thanks a lot. We'll try 2 tablets. As they worked over the child, Claudia asked Miriam, "What are their names? What do you call the children?" The answer was so long and complicated that even Claudia looked daunted, but she recovered quickly. "I'll never pronounce that," she said finally. "We'll call them Mickey and Minnie."
"Walt Disney will sue," Sean warned,
but she ignored him and wrapped Minnie in her own blanket.
"You'll have to carry her," she told Sean matter-of-factly. "If the little bugger pees on me, I'll wring your neck," he protested.
"And Alfonso can carry Mickey." Sean could see that Claudia's maternal instincts were thoroughly aroused, and his resentment of this additional burden that had been thrust upon them was tempered by the tonic the new responsibilities had been to her. Claudia had sloughed off her exhaustion and lethargy and was more vigorous and incisive than she had been since Job's death. Sean lifted the child's almost weightless little body onto his back and strapped it there with a strip of the blanket. The heat of the fever soaked through the blanket as though she were a hot water bottle. However, it was a familiar experience to the child, who had been carried since infancy in this fashion, and she was immediately quiet and somnolent.
"I still can't believe what's happening to me," Sean muttered. "A goddamn unpaid nursemaid at my age."
But he plunged once more into the swamp. Before the night had half run, Miriam had proved an asset that far outweighed the additional burden that the two children had placed upon them. She knew the river area with the intimacy of a swamp creature. She went ahead with Matatu and guided him through the labyrinth of islands and lagoons, picking out the secret pathways that saved them hours of wearisome exploration. A little after midnight, when Orion, the great hunter, stood directly overhead with his bow at full draw, Miriam led them out into the bank of the Rio Save and pointed out the ford through which a man could wade to the far bank. They rested, and the women tended the children and fed them morsels of the leguan meat. The chloroquine had taken effect, and the little girl was cooler and less fretful. After a hurried meal, the men concealed themselves in the reed beds and stared out across the black waters in which the stars were reflected like drowning fireflies.
"This is the most dangerous point," Sean whispered. "China was patrolling the river all day yesterday in the Hind, and he'll be back at first light. We don't dare waste time here. We have to get across and clear before sunrise."
"They'll be waiting on the far side," Alfonso demurred. "They'll be expecting us."
"That's right," Sean agreed.
"They're here. But we know they are here.
We'll leave the women on this side and go across to clear the far bank. We can't use firearms. It'll have to be knives and wire. It's wet work tonight." He used the old scout's term for it, sebenza enamanzi. "In more ways than one, it will be a wet work night." Sean's wire was a 4-foot length of stainless steel, the single strand that he had cut from the winch cable of the Hercules aircraft before abandoning it. Job had carved two hardwood buttons and fixed them to either end of the wire to form grips. It rolled into a coil the size of a silver dollar and slipped easily into the grenade pocket of his webbing. Now Sean fished it out and unrolled it. He tested it, settling the wooden buttons between his fingers and jerking it tight, grunting with satisfaction at the familiar tension in the single resilient strand. Then he recoiled the wire and slipped it over his left wrist like a bangle. The three of them stripped completely naked. Wet clothing dripped water to alert an enemy or give him a hold in a hand-to-hand struggle. Each of them wore his knife on a short cord around his bare neck. Sean went to where Claudia waited with the children in the reeds. When he kissed her, her lips were soft and warm, and she clung to him briefly. "Have you forgiven me?" he asked. For an answer, she kissed him again. "Come back soon," she whispered. The three men slid into the water soundlessly, keeping close contact, and dog paddled quietly out from the bank, letting the current carry them well down below the ford. They landed in a bed of papyrus on the south bank and slid ashore on their bellies. Sean's naked white body gleamed in the starlight. He rolled in the sticky black swamp mud until it coated every inch of his skin, and then he scooped a double handful and rubbed it over his face. "Ready?" he asked quietly, and freed the trench knife in its sheath at his throat. "Let's go." They moved out away from the river and circled back upstream towards the ford. The swamps were confined to the north bank, while this side of the river was drier and the forests grew almost to the river's edge. They stayed in the shadows beneath the trees for concealment. As they drew closer to the ford, they moved more cautiously, spreading out, Sean in the middle and Alfonso and Matatu on the flanks. Sean smelt Renamo before he saw them. It was the odour of stale native tobacco smoke and dried sweat in unwashed clothing, and he froze, listening and staring ahead with all his soul concentrated on it. A little ahead of him in the darkness, a man coughed softly and cleared his throat, and Sean placed him accurately. He sank down and touched the earth, sweeping a clear spot with his fingertips for his next footstep, so that no twig or dry leaf would betray him. One step at a time, he moved forward until he had the Renamo's head silhouetted against the starry sky. He was sitting behind an RPD machine gun on its bipod, staring out across the river. Sean waited, and the minutes drew out, 5, then 10, each one a separate age. Then someone else yawned and stretched out on the left flank, and immediately a third voice cautioned him to silence in an angry whisper. 3 of them. Sean memorized each position, and then withdrew as quietly and cautiously as he had come in. On the edge of the forest, Alfonso was waiting for him. A minute later, Matatu crept back to join them. 3, Alfonso whispered. Yes, 3, Sean agreed.
4, Matatu contradicted them both. There is another one just below the bank.
Matatu missed nothing, and Sean accepted his estimate without reservation. Only 4 Renamo in the ambush, Sean was relieved. He'd expected more. But China must be spreading his men thinly to cover every path and every ford of the river. No noise, Sean warned them. One shot and we'll have the entire army doing a war dance on our backs. Matatu, you take the one who found below the bank. Alfonso, the one in the reeds who spoke. I'll take the 2 in the centre. He slipped the wire bangle off his left wrist and unrolled it, once more stretching and testing it between his hands to get the feel of it. Wait until you hear my man blow before you strike yours. He reached out and lightly touched their shoulders, the ritual benediction, and then they separated and drifted away into the night, back towards the river.